like a locomotive, sipping, drinking Arizona. Mixtape just around the corner, did a lot in California. Can't wait to drop this, don't you? Yeah, they gon' have fun with that. Smash like song, in my
hey, everybody, welcome back to the podcast. It's always up to speed with Formula One. Today is Thursday, April 18th, 2024. My name is Mark Daly. Flying solo tonight, Mr. Mark Hamilton did not make it out of the garage, did not make it to the starting grid this evening. And it's actually literally exactly what happened. Poor old Hammy had some car troubles today and has spent the afternoon trying to rescue both his wife and his vehicle and get them back home because his poor wife was stranded on the side of the road and poor old Mark's trying to put the pieces back together. Anyways, I will probably have to shorten up the agenda a little bit tonight because the one I built out was actually meant more for two people, and it's looking rather ambitious for one person, especially now that it is almost 10:30 Thursday evening that if I go through this whole thing, I'll probably be here literally half the night by the time I get finished recording and editing this thing. But anyways, it's all good. Anyways, so we're just about to get going here. And well, actually, we're done with FP1 at the Chinese Grand Prix at the Shanghai International Circuit. The first time that we've been there in several years. And just go down a couple of the timings here for FP1. So Lance Stroll from Aston Martin topping the charts with a 136.302. Oscar Piastri from McLaren was second fastest with a 136.629, so about 0.33 seconds slower than Lance. Max Verstappen, 136.66, so about 0.36 seconds of 0.35 seconds, pardon me, behind Lance. Sergio Perez was fourth with 136.69, and then Nico Hülkenberg was fifth fastest at a 137.101, so that's already 0.8 of a second slower than the Aston Martin. Just rounding out the rest of the top 10 in FP1 was Kevin Magnussen from Haas, Esteban Ocon from Alpine, Alexander Albon from Williams at eighth fastest, Danny Ricciardo from RB, and then Valtteri Bottas from Sauber, rounding out the top 10. So lots of things going on. It was red flagged for a little bit. There was a fire right next to the track, but we'll get to going. Keep an eye on the timings as we move through the show. But although if I look at the timings, I don't think we're going to get to FP2 anytime soon. Anyway, so we'll just leave it at that. Excuse me, before I get into the rest of the show, just want to give a quick shout out to the Race Weekend magazine. Head on over to theraceweekend.com and use my promo code ScuderiaPod at checkout to receive a 10% discount on a year subscription. And that's theraceweekend.com, RACEWKND.com. And also check out racingexclusives.com, who have once again provided a 1/2 scale autographed Pierre Gasly helmet for a giveaway in our fantasy league for this year. And we'll get to the stand in a moment. And thank you again to Thies at racingexclusives.com, and check them out. They've got unique F1 merchandise and memorabilia that comes with a certificate of authenticity. So, okay, let's take a look here and see what's going on with our fantasy league. So we've had some changes here after the last race. So moving up into first now, we have Seat for Science. Ashis Yena is in first, 7 points ahead of the Red Beards, holding steady at 2. Kerry Duro F1 has dropped down into 3rd. Moving up to 4th is Nakunda Racing. Dropping down to 5th is DJ Bean, holding steady at 6 and 7 is Tails I Win. And in 7th is Big Prize Carreras. And then, oh, interesting. I see some of the names have actually been restored here that had been censored a couple of weeks ago. Anyways, Big Prize Carreras holding steady at 7th. Dropping down to 8th is Hamilton, 8-time champion, so an appropriately named team for 8th place. Nick Pobednik F1 has dropped down into 9th, and moving back up into the top 10 is It's Like This, Michael Cronje's team, who is our reigning fantasy champ. So got some moves going on there. I think the last time that I gave an update after the previous race. I don't think they updated them properly now that I look at it. Let's just quickly go down the driver standing in the Formula One World Championship. Max Verstappen from Red Bull has 77 points. Sergio Perez from Red Bull is second with 64. Charles Leclerc, first of the two Ferraris, 59. Carlos Sainz is fourth with 55 points. Lando Norris from McLaren, 37. Oscar Piastri, George Russell, Fernando Alonso, Lewis Hamilton, and Lance Stroll round out the top 10. In the constructors, we have Red Bull leading the way with 141 points, 21 points ahead of Ferrari. McLaren is third with 69. Mercedes is fourth with 34. Aston Martin is fifth in the constructors with 33 points. Then going down the rest of the order, we've got RB with 7, Haas with 4, and then Williams, Sauber, and Alpine, the trio of pointsless teams after the opening four rounds of the Formula One, the 2024 Formula One World Championship. All right, we're going to start the show now talking about Carlos Sainz, the Ferrari driver, leaving at the end of the season to make way for 7-time world champion Lewis Hamilton, who will slide into Carlos's seat at Ferrari next year. And he hasn't signed, at least that we know of in the public realm, and was talking to the media before at the start of the Chinese Grand Prix events over the past couple of days. And he was asked about what is going on at the moment and asked if there was any preference, or if there's a if he might have to switch to a team that has a less potential or less chance of success for next year. And Carlos replied by saying, quote, "No, my best options are still open," which I think is a positive thing, and I think is something that is quite obviously requires a bit of time given the situation of the market. It's going to take some time for everyone to make up their own minds and take their decisions, but the good options are still open. There hasn't been any progress over the last couple of weeks, so there isn't anything to update you on. Obviously, the sooner it gets to a point, the sooner everything develops, the better, because at the same time, it's not like it's affecting my performance this year, but the earlier that you get to take out of your head and of the situation, the better. But it requires time and it requires some decision making. So now it's time to let that happen and see its progress. Anyways, he goes on to say, just when he was asked about maybe some preferences, maybe not so much for next year, but maybe looking into or choosing a team that might be more successful for 2026. He had to say, quote, "2026 is a bit of a coin toss. It's impossible to know right now who's going to get it right for 2026. So even when I take the decision for where I'm going to be for 2026, 2027, it doesn't matter how much you talk to the teams, how much they sell you, how good they're going to do with the engine. The reality is no one knows. If someone wins in 2026, in my opinion, it's not because of smart decision making, but because you're just in the right place at the right time. Regarding 2025, for sure my option is with the level I'm showing and I'm driving now. Obviously being in a competitive car would be very appealing for me, but again, it doesn't depend on me and I need to keep waiting." End quote. So that's interesting because Helmut Marko, the Red Bull Motorsport advisor, says that Carlos Sainz has a very, very big offer on the table for Audi, and it's something that Red Bull is not in the position to either match or beat if they're going to negotiate any further with Sainz. Anyways, he was interviewed by Austrian newspaper Kleine Zeitung, and Marko said, quote, "We're talking to him. He's having the strongest season in F1, but he has a very lucrative offer from Audi that we can't match or beat. But we know from him from the Toro Rosso days, even when he drove with Max in 2015 and early 2016. But it really hurt him back when we backed Verstappen at Red Bull and not him," end quote. So very interesting. I wonder if there's anything to it, if Helmut Marko has tipped his hand a little bit, and maybe he has, maybe he hasn't. Is it a little bit of a leverage? But if there wasn't something to it, it would just be a bit of an odd thing for Marko to say. But he certainly doesn't have any lack of choices. You know, as far as we know, the seat at Mercedes that is going to be vacated by Lewis Hamilton at the end of the year, that's potentially somewhere he could go. Red Bull is obviously an option because, you know, either one or both of those seats could be empty at the end of the year, because there's still talk that Max might not be happy because of the ongoing fallout, if you want to call it that, from the Christian Horner scandal and some of the turmoil and supposed bad blood with management. So who knows? Maybe there's something there. We still don't know what's going to happen with Sergio Perez. So I think everything's really on the table, and possibly he could end up at and Aston Martin as well. I think, if you're Carlos Sainz, sure, it must have stung initially when you found out that you were losing your drive at Ferrari and you're going to have to make way for somebody else. But certainly, I mean, he does have his pick. I mean, it's the right place at right time almost almost a choice. So he is having a phenomenal season. I mean, of course, he's only fourth in the championship, but let's not forget he missed the second race of the year at Jeddah because he had a appendicitis and had to have the operation, and that sidelined him for a little bit. But I mean, he's looked really, really good over the first couple of races, and it's really certainly showed up his teammate Charles Leclerc. I'm going to be watching, I'm sure, like many people are, over the next couple of days, because we got the first sprint race of the year at in China, and then we got the race itself on Sunday or midnight here on Sunday morning in on the West Coast, or 3 a.m. Eastern time. So it is. It's going to be interesting to see, because Carlos has been solid. Is it just sort of a bit of a flash in the pan, and maybe he doesn't do as well from here? I mean, he certainly seems very confident. He seems very relaxed, and maybe that's the key to it, right? Is that that he knows he's doing well. He's obviously a valuable commodity on the driver market. There's three very nice, well, four if you count Audi as well. Sauber is, well, not really the greatest this year, and next year as well. But when Audi fully for that team for 2026, when that becomes the Audi works team out and out, I'm sure it will be completely different, and it's going to be fascinating to see what that team does and what or which two drivers they end up with their inaugural lineup in F1. So if you're Sainz, do you maybe take that seat? Do you go to Sauber, maybe knowing that you have to sacrifice a little bit in the short term to become part of that Audi project in F1 starting in 2026? Or do you go for one of the more known quantities in Mercedes, Red Bull, or Aston Martin, supposedly? Well, maybe it sounds like that Red Bull's off the table according to Helmut Marko, but who knows? Certainly a very interesting situation to keep an eye on. Okay, so we're going to just shift gears a little bit and talk about Mercedes, which is who've become the first Formula One team to ever exceed a £500 million turnover, about $1 billion US, according to their latest published accounts. So they are, well, the team that, well, the Mercedes AMG Petronas is the team's name, but there's a company that runs it, that's Mercedes-Benz Grand Prix Limited, declared a turnover in 2023 of £546.5 million, which went right up to the year end of December 31st of 2023. So that is an increase of £72 million over 2022. And that figure at that year, at the end of the year, was £474.5 million. So if you look and compare to the amount of money that that Red Bull posted, so Red Bull Technology, which is the company behind Red Bull's or Red Bull Racing, had a turnover in 2022 of £385.6 million. So anyways, despite, all the money that's coming in and at Mercedes, so they did report a bit of a drop in profits. It was down to £83.8 million, and that was down, about £6 million when they posted a profits of £89.7 million in 2022. So, there's a lot going on there, but that is absolutely some mind-boggling and huge numbers that Mercedes is talking about. I mean, Formula One really is incredible. The amount of money that comes into these teams and comes out of these teams, and then, goes back into the cars and drivers and everything else. Absolutely amazing stuff. Sticking with Red Bull, they've said that their 2026 engine project is hitting all the targets, according to Christian Horner. He was talking to, Jonathan Noble at motorsport.com this week, specifically about the engine project and the partnership that they have with Ford. Horner had to say, quote, "With the engine, we're on an aggressive curve, being a brand new power unit manufacturer, but the team is really rising to the challenge. Our facilities are complete, both from a test and development point of view, with the dynos and rig rooms, etc., and a manufacturing capability. But 2 years in the engine world is a very small period of time. We're on a steep learning curve, but we're on that curve and where we would expect to be on that curve at this point in time. We're hitting the targets that we're setting for ourselves. Now, those targets stack up to our competitors is always difficult to know, but the effort that's going in behind the scenes is huge because it is literally a race against the clock to the start of 2026. He goes on to say, just talking a little bit more about the, some of the uncertainties about, what sort of performance and what sort of power that that engine would have in 2026. And, apparently, this is no secret. Max Verstappen hasn't really committed beyond, not just to Red Bull, but to Formula One beyond his current contract. And he said it's far too early in the game to really be looking at how the engine is going. Max had to say, quote, "I mean, if we have to speculate about everything, I might be worried if I'm still alive tomorrow, right? So I don't really worry about that too much. Of course, I'm in close contact with Christian about that and the people working there. Everyone's working flat out, so there's no need to panic about that. It's still not 2026. We know that it's a very big task. We don't take that lightly. And of course, with so many well-established engine manufacturers, we also don't think it's going to be easy to beat them, but we still have a lot of good people working on the project and we're very excited about it. So time will tell, of course, where it's going to be," end quote. Interesting though that, Max, we've talked about it on the podcast before, quite a few times over the past couple of months that, he's really kind of in a position that he could almost walk away and do whatever he wants. He's been very non-committal after, or what he's going to do after his current contract is up in a couple of years. But we'll see. Interesting stuff. But I do find this whole story about Red Bull and the fact that they are in this partnership with Ford and the new development of their powertrain, Red Bull powertrains, a very compelling story that I enjoy keeping up to date. Talking about teams and what's going on behind the scenes. So Andretti's massive challenge, a big risk identified, even if they earn approval. And this is an article written by Henry Valentine over at planetf1.com. And he's just writing about a column that was written by former F1 strategist Bernie Collins. And we've heard her on the Sky Sports feed, giving some insight to calls from strategy and tactics and things like that. Anyways, she says that she feels that it's a big risk what Andretti is undertaking, even if they get approved to join Formula One in 2026. Collins said to say, quote, "Setting up a new F1 team is a massive challenge, let alone setting up a new engine team. So it doesn't surprise me that they want to do that in steps to bring in people. If I think of my own thing to say, right, you've got a clean slate on the strategy. You can do whatever you want to do to build the team around you. That is hard. It's hard to set up, get the software in place, get the historic data, get all the things that a team works on. We work a lot on historic data that's not readily available to those of us that were just kicking around on the sidelines. So it's very difficult. And then, like you say, to recruit the right people and the team below you with no definitive end game, it's a big risk. Maybe someone in a senior position could take that risk, but a lot of junior people won't be in a safe position of being fit to take any of those risks. So it'll feel like a big risk. And it's very hard to get everything built around this 2-3-4 year end goal, because it's going to be very difficult, I think, to get the right people without first having a little show of the hand of where you you could be or what you do. The factory is probably the first physical step of that. That's the first sign of real intent. Not the first sign, but it's a physical sign on the ground in Silverstone, where the people that they're trying to recruit, that they are serious, that they're not going away, that this will encourage people to get behind the project and devote their time to the project, end quote. So there you go. I think some very good points outlined there by Bernie Collins. Anyways, former world champion Jacques Villeneuve says that, well, actually warned Andretti about their ambitions in Formula One. So Jacques was interviewed by Sports Illustrated, and he was a little bit... I don't know what how to really say. I mean, he kind of had like a mixed emotions about it. I guess he was asked by the interviewer if he felt that the rejection that Andretti got or the rebuffal or whatever you want to call it back in January was the right thing for Formula One to do. Jacques had to say, quote, "It depends. As a fan, you would want them in. But all we can say is that FOM had information we didn't have on how the team was going to be built. We don't know. We only know what we see in the media, and what we see in the media today is very dangerous because anyone with an account online can be a journalist and say whatever, and suddenly it's true. So it's very difficult to start making judgments based on that. We don't have all the info, but obviously it's a big racing company. They have cars everywhere. They have big money behind them. Does that make them a potential winning team in F1? No. A potential, yes. But who knows? A lot of people have tried and broken their teeth. I built a team with Craig Pollock, Barr, which today has become Mercedes. It's not easy. It's not really not easy, even with the right people on board. So obviously they have some knowledge that we didn't. If not, they would have been in. End quote. So there you go. I think that's actually a fair comment, you know, made by the 1997 world champion. But regardless of Jacques Villeneuve or Bernie Collins, you know, there is obviously some risk to Andretti, you know, coming into Formula One. But some of the things I think that that were outlined in the rejection from a couple of months back, sure, you know, that this pre-agreement with for an engine deal, I still don't even understand fully what a pre-agreement is supposed to be. You know, that they supposedly had for Renault power units. That's just bizarre. That's obviously a big concern. The other one that I thought that was just a bit of a silly comment was that that F1 or FOM felt that that Andretti was going to benefit more from the exposure in F1 than vice versa. And I don't know. I don't agree with that totally. I think the Andretti name and the reputation that they've built in racing everywhere, and the fact that you know, there's multiple Andretti's that have raced in series all over the globe and have been very successful, going all the way back to Mario Andretti, who won the world championship in Formula One way back in 1979. I felt that was a bit of a silly thing. Anyways, I think what Jacques says is a fair point, and it's not without risk, and perhaps they had more information behind the scenes that they weren't able to divulge, but it certainly looks like with some of the things that they've been doing in recent weeks with the facilities that they've secured near Silverstone are a step obviously in the right direction. Anyways, a story to keep an eye on. A couple more just to quickly touch on here before we head into a break. So Ayao Komatsu, the new team principal at Haas, says that the owner, Gene Haas, is still apparently interested and eager to invest in the team, with the caveat that they don't waste his money, more or less. So I don't know. This is always a bit of a touchy point for us here on the podcast. So Komatsu had to say, quote, "I got officially on 10 January, right? Gene's message from day one was absolutely clear. He said he's got money, he's ready to invest it, but we've got to show him that we can use the money responsibly, efficiently. He doesn't want to see the waste. There's a reason he's a billionaire, right? He doesn't like to waste money, right? So when I looked at it, then there's so many areas we can improve. So that's why I wasn't too worried about his initial message. Come on, you guys, you need to show me you're using my money responsibly, then get to a certain position, then I think about investments. But I know for a fact that he'll really invest when we get to that stage, and already he's commissioned a new motorhome for next year, which is not a small investment, so we are doing that. And also we are now recruiting reasonably from our size of people. A decent chunk of new recruitments is approved, so yes, Gene is now actioning what he told me, so I'm not worried about that he's not going to invest. He will invest, but we've got to do our part, which is use his money responsibly," end quote. So yeah. I don't know really what to add to that. I understand the sentiments and the thought there about not frivolously wasting and burning money for no reason. But it's a small team to begin with, and they've never had a huge budget to work with, and I would find it certainly fairly hard to believe if they were wasting money away. But I don't know. That the only person that can truly say that for certain, if Haas F1 is wasting money, is Gene Haas himself. He only knows where that bar is and where it is. If they're doing right or wrong. Anyways, Günther Steiner, former team principal at Haas, has been rumored to be returning to Formula One as potentially a team owner. But who would that be? Apparently, according to SpeedCafe.com, Steiner has secured a massive amount of funding that would at least make him able to acquire a stake in a team. And apparently there was some sort of rumor out there behind the scenes that that there was a deal for Steiner to purchase RB, which Steiner apparently told SpeedCafe.com that wasn't going to, or at least denied that there was a deal in place. Anyways, who else could it be? I mean, Ferrari, Mercedes, Red Bull, Sauber all have solid ownership. Aston Martin, the Strolls are behind that. It's unlikely. Well, who knows? I mean, Gene Haas is obviously a money kind of guy. I wonder if the money was right, if he would consider selling it to someone else, even Günther Steiner. Anyway, Steiner himself had to say, quote, "I'm not interested in running a team on the same premise as Haas. I've spent so many years in F1 that I want to do more than just participate and score points every once in a while. I want to really compete and try to win. I'm not going to come back just to run the team if I don't have the opportunity," end quote. So, there's three other options out there. There's Alpine, which has been a dumpster fire for quite some time. Williams, they are owned by Drilton Capital, which is their venture capitalists. Always kind of wondered, how long are they going to hold on to this team? Or are they just kind of holding it for now until the right offer comes along? And then the other option that is in this article on speedcafe.com is McLaren. So I don't know, McLaren's more than just a racing team, a Formula One team. They've got an Indy team. They've also got their road car division. The majority of their shareholders of the McLaren Group is the Bahraini Sovereign Wealth Fund. And who knows? But this is an interesting one. I don't know how much there is to this story, but we'll certainly keep an eye on it. Anyways, I'm running late for a break here. I need to get a bit of a drink of water. I need to get ready for the second part of the show. So we'll just step away for a few moments here. A message from our sponsors, so please don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
All right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
All right, welcome back to the show, and just going to jump into some silly season stuff and talk about driver rumors, because that's always fun to talk about. So apparently a PO'd Toto Wolff has decided on Lewis Hamilton's replacement after becoming frustrated with what Max Verstappen potentially may or may not do in terms of a move at Red Bull, or a decision to stay at Red Bull. And this comes from F1 TV presenter Will Buxton, who is pretty adamant that Toto Wolff intends to put Andrea Kimi Antonelli into a Mercedes, or into the seat at Mercedes that will be left open by Lewis Hamilton, who will leave for Ferrari at the end of the year. Buxton believes that Toto has made up his mind and he cannot miss another chance to put another really hot young prospect in one of his cars, like he missed out with Max Verstappen a decade ago when he offered him a reserve driver role, which just wasn't good enough for Max, and he ended up signing with the Red Bull organization, who put him on onto the grid with Toro Rosso when Max was just 17 years old. That story, obviously, we know how that ends. Well, we don't know how it ends, but we know where we are right now with Max. He's become a dominant driver and three times world champion to date, and we'll see where that goes from here. Buxton was talking on the Red Flags podcast saying, quote, Antonelli is going to Mercedes. I think Toto's made up his mind. He wants Antonelli in the seat because he's PO'd. He's PO'd that he missed the opportunity to give Max the opportunity back in 2014. So you put Antonelli in the seat. There you go. So we'll see whether or not that happens. But according to Will Buxton, next year at Mercedes will be George Russell and Andrea Kimi Antonelli. So we'll see if that materializes or not. Speaking about Andrea Kimi Antonelli, he had his first test in Formula One. It was a 2-day test at the Red Bull Ring, driving the Mercedes 2021 car, the W12. He'll have another test later in the year with their 2022 car, the W13. That'll come later in this year. So he's certainly getting his opportunity to do that or get some meaningful laps in a Formula One car. Antonelli did post on social media accounts, quote, hello guys, the first 2 days done in an F1 car. It's been an incredible experience. I loved every second of it. The first day didn't go as planned. We got some snow, unfortunately, so we couldn't really drive, but the second day was dry and we got quite a lot of laps and it was really good fun. I want to thank all the team for all their hard work and I'm excited for what's coming. Then afterwards, there was some additional quotes on the Mercedes official team website. Antonelli said, quote, we did some sim work and ran through some important things ahead of the day. That was really useful because once I was out on track, I knew what the team was telling me on the radio. I've learned a lot in these 2 days, things which will be really helpful when I go back to F2, but I need to keep working and keep improving too, end quote. So is Andrea Kimi Antonelli going to be the next big, young, hot prospect in Formula One? We'll wait and see. All right. So let's talk about, let's go back to Carlos Sainz. So just this is a possibility that he might not end up there. This is an article written by Oliver Harden over planetf1.com. And, Oliver's just talking about the possibility that there really is something to this this rumor that Antonelli is perhaps going to go to Williams for the second half of the season just to get him some race time and some meaningful F1 time before getting promoted to Mercedes for 2025. Antonelli, only 17 years old, driving an F2, and he's apparently the team really regards him as their number one choice to partner George Russell for next year, and it would be a bit of a gamble, you know, for Toto Wolff to do that. We'll see. We'll keep that open, but if that does happen, what is the next likely landing place for Carlos Sainz? Because according to what we were talking about earlier in the show, that Helmut Marko says that Audi has made a huge offer for Sainz that they can't match or beat. Apparently, according to Will Buxton, Andrea Kimi Antonelli is going to take Lewis Hamilton's seat at Mercedes for next year. Then that only really leaves two potential attractive teams or seats for Sainz to look towards for 2025, and then that would be Aston Martin, according to Eddie Jordan, who was saying a couple of weeks ago that if we see an all-Spanish lineup of Fernando Alonso and Carlos Sainz at Aston Martin next year, don't be surprised, because that is a very, very good possibility. But I'm really curious about Helmut Marko's comments about Sainz getting this huge offer from Audi to go and sign for them, which I think is kind of interesting because I kind of wonder how that's going to work, you know, because they don't officially take over until 2026. And there's been some talk about what's going to happen with not just Valtteri Bottas, but also Zhou Guanyu at Sauber for next year. Would he, you know, do they have a say in Sauber? Sauber a separate thing? I'm not sure exactly how that team is structured at the moment, but certainly it's cool stuff. I love the silly season. I love these juicy kind of rumors about drivers, and it's been really quite an up and down last couple of months. I mean, obviously Lewis was huge news, Andretti was huge news, the Christian Horner scandal was huge news for the wrong reasons, but I'm kind of glad that we've got some of this more unpleasant stuff behind us. Not that we should forget about what was going on at Red Bull, because who knows exactly what did and whether or not that might flare up again. But at least recently we've been talking about things in Formula One for more of the positive reasons, and certainly silly season is one of them. Anyways, talking a little bit more about Lewis Hamilton, he says he needs to talk with Toto Wolff to prepare for his move to Ferrari, and he says he needs to go over what he calls some of the finer details of that move. Anyways, Hamilton said, quote, "I think I will start a conversation with Toto because I don't know how to navigate. I've never been in this position before at this point in the year. When I was leaving McLaren, it was towards the end of the season. I didn't get to go to Mercedes till I think it was in December when I had my first seat fit. After the season was done, I'm not quite sure how I'm going to navigate it. Right now, I want to finish on a high here, so all my energy is going into this. Of course, there's excitement for the future, but right now, we're going through a difficult place. That is my challenge. That is where all my energy is going, to try and figure out how we can get ourselves back to the top. How can I work with the guys? How can I give better debriefs, give them better direction to get back fighting at the front? I'm a competitor first and foremost, so I just want to win. Just thinking about next year isn't going to help me to do that," end quote. So this is also where it gets really interesting. I mean, obviously it's fascinating and shocking and earth-shattering news that Lewis made the decision to switch to Ferrari for 2025, but there's been these rumors that Red Bull designer Adrian Newey was supposedly spotted at Bologna Airport in Italy, and that apparently the rumor out there is that he's received an offer to join Ferrari. So that's quite a juicy one. So this is a story that's been a little bit, it's been around for a little while, but last month, apparently Newey had received a huge offer from Lawrence Stroll to move over to Aston Martin, and that apparently happened over the weekend at the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix in Jeddah. Mike Crack, who's the team principal at Aston Martin, denied that at the recent Japanese Grand Prix, and he said he just dismissed all those rumors, and that apparently they had approached Newey, and he said that his team are, you know, quite satisfied with their current technical lineup. So anyways, according to German publication Automotor und Sport, who said that were reporting the rumors that Newey has received an offer from Ferrari, and it was spotted Bologna Airport with the rumors that he's going to move over there is very, very serious. So apparently, well, not apparently, it's a fact. Newey turned 65 last year. It said anything. Well, it's said that he hates internal politics and fighting and things like that, which has been going on for quite a while, apparently between Christian Horner and Helmut Marko at Red Bull. And we'll wait and see. I mean, that would be a big shocking thing should it happen. And I still can't help but wonder if slowly we're starting to see the seams come apart at Red Bull. All right, well, sticking with Red Bull, or more specifically RB, Danny Ricciardo, who has a one-year contract with the team, is Well, according to SpeedCafe.com, is basically on loan from Red Bull Racing, where he's their reserve driver. He was talking to Speed Cafe, and he said that he'd be happy to stay with RB in 2025. He said, quote, "As I feel today, yes, I'm enjoying the driving now. It's not so much result-driven. Obviously, I don't want just to be here just to be here. I want to earn that seat, and the team is hopefully further up. So yeah, I guess it goes both ways. I mean, the answer is yes, but is it more fun fighting at the front? Is it more fun fighting for podiums and wins? Absolutely. And the truth is, if I draw a line under it and I speak to myself in the third person, why did Daniel Ricciardo return after a few months off last year? Because I believe I can stand on that podium again. I can win races again. Ultimately, that is it. The belief is there. And as long as the belief is there, I think I'll be happy being here. But eventually, when I do hang it up, I would love to have stood on the podium a few more times," end quote. So that is interesting. So Ricciardo kind of keeping his options open, whether that will be his choice eventually before the year is done. That will be maybe not his destiny, you know, maybe his destiny is out of his hands. Anyways, Christian Horner, the Red Bull team principal, says that that Ricciardo can turn his season around with just a single result. Horner said, quote, "His teammate is delivering, and that naturally then puts pressure on you, but he's been there before. I'm sure he'll bounce back." He goes on to say, "Daniel's a big boy. He's been around. He's been around the block. He knows how things work. And I think that he just needs to get one good result in the bag, and then that smile will return," end quote. So perhaps that's the case. I mean, the accident that he had on the opening lap of the Chinese Grand Prix with Alex Albon a couple of weeks ago, that was, you know, let's be fair, that was a racing incident. Ricciardo, he looked to one side to see where Lance Stroll was, kind of moved over a little bit in the entry, I believe, in what was it, turn three or four, and collected the front of Alex Albon, who he didn't know was behind him. It all happened in an instant, especially in the chaotic opening few corners at the beginning of a Grand Prix, and that race was done. But he didn't qualify quite as good as his teammate Yuki Tsunoda in Japan, but he wasn't that far off. I mean, I think it was only a few hundredths of a second, so, but the difference was Yuki made it into the top 10 shootout, and Danny Ricciardo just missed out. So there's that to consider as well. It's going to take another quick break. We'll come back in a moment. Going to talk about the Chinese Grand Prix coming back for the first time since 2019. Obviously, the pandemic got in the way, so we're going to preview that in just a moment. So please don't go away. We'll be right back. All right, well, welcome back to the show. And yes, going back to the Shanghai International Circuit for the first time since 2019. Chinese Grand Prix first came on the calendar 20 years ago now. Rubens Barrichello won the inaugural Chinese Grand Prix for Ferrari way back in 2004. We've seen Fernando Alonso win there, Michael Schumacher, Kimi Raikkonen, Lewis Hamilton, Sebastian Vettel. A whole bunch of Lewis Hamiltons and Nico Rosberg. Danny Ricciardo won way back in 2018 as well. So really looking forward to this one. So since the first race here, let's see, the most winningest team there has been Mercedes, who have won six times, most recently in 2019. Ferrari won there four times, but it's been over a decade since they last won in 2013. McLaren have three wins there, and Red Bull have two. That would have been 2009 and 2018. So Lewis Hamilton is the most winningest driver, in China. He's won there eight times. Fernando Alonso, Nico Rosberg have both won a pair of times in Shanghai as well. So the Shanghai International Circuit, it is, let's take a look at some of the stats here. So it's got a capacity of 200,000 people. We'll see how many people people make it out this year. So they broke ground in April 2003, opened the track in June 2004, had the first Chinese Grand Prix there. And so the configuration that we have is a 5.45 kilometer long circuit, or 3.39 miles, 16 turns. Michael Schumacher owns the track record here, or the race lap record at any rate. That's a 132.238 that was set way back in 2004 when Schumi was driving a Ferrari F2004. So yeah, that could very well come tumbling down this year. So it is a very interesting track. We have a couple of very, very long straightaways. So the very immediately we have the start finish straight. So this is going to be like eighth gear. This is about a 205, 210 mile an hour straight by the time they get into turn one. The complex of turns going through turns one, two, three, and into four are quite interesting, because turn one is a bit of a, you know, sweeping but tight corner with a decreasing radius to the right. So it's a right-hander. You go into it, you go into turn two, that starts to tighten up even more as you go around to the right. Then you're going to throw it to the left as the radius of the curve tightens up again. Then you come on a turn four into fifth gear, up to 230 kilometers an hour, then a little flick to the right in turn five. Then you come down into turn six, which is quite a tight corner, not quite a 180 degrees, but not too far off of it. You go through a bunch of sweeping turns. You're going to go through turn seven and seventh gear, 275 kilometers an hour. Turns eight and nine, then you're going to get down to turn 10. You're going to throw it to the right there in about going to throw it to the left in a 90 degree left-hander. You're going to fly up towards turns 11 and 12, another left-hander that's 90 degrees. You're going to wind it around through turn 12 and 13, and then you're going to come into this very, very long back straight. You're going to hit in excess of 200 miles an hour again, eighth gear. But then you're going to come down into turns 14 and 15. So turn 14 is going to be a second gear corner at 80 kilometers an hour. Very short little dog leg as you get up to turn 15. Like I said, dog legs to the right. You're going to get to turn 16, and then you're going to turn hard left and get back into the start finish straight again and do it all again. So, you know, 130 something or whatever it was. What was Schumacher's lap record? Let's go back to that. So that was a 132.238, as we saw with some of the times in free practice earlier in the show when we started recording. I mean, the time that was set by Lance Stroll was a 130 something. Of course, he might be running very, very lightly. So who knows if that track record could crumble. I mean, it's been 5 years since we've been in Shanghai. Obviously, the pandemic got in the way, but that could be a track record that is ripe for the picking. So what we're going to see this weekend, we're going to see some of the softer compounds in the mid-range of the Pirelli compounds. We're going to have the C2 hard, C3 medium, and the C4 softs. So we're going to see a little bit of that. So let's take a look here. So this is a fairly abrasive track. Pirelli rates it 4 out of 5 on the scale of abrasiveness. Track evolution is a 5 out of 5. Fairly stressful for the tires. It's also heavy on braking, and it's sort of a mid downforce track. Let's take a look. So we're looking at, according to Pirelli, 26 psi pressure for the front tires, 22 psi in the rear tires, and it should be a good one. We're gonna have 56 laps on Sunday. Just looking at the timings here, we have we got the sprint race and sprint qualifying on Friday, so got that to look forward to, which looks like Pacific time that the sprint race is going to go from 8 till 9 p.m., so 11 till midnight on the East Coast. Saturday going into Sunday morning, the race starts at midnight or 3 a.m. Eastern time. Looking at the weather, so this is going to be a little bit interesting, because it looks nice and dry right now, what we've seen on Thursday night here on the West Coast, so Friday in Friday afternoon in China, in Shanghai. But looking at the weather forecast for Saturday, We're looking at highs of 21 degrees Celsius, a low of 15 Celsius, and cloudy skies. That's about 70 Fahrenheit for a high and 60 Fahrenheit for a low. And then Sunday, this is where it gets interesting, sort of similar temperatures, 20 Celsius and 14 degrees Celsius for a low, or a high and a low. But we're looking at a 50% chance of rain or showers or drizzle at about the time that the race is going to happen. So I know it's still a couple of days out, but it should be fairly interesting to see whether or not that develops into anything more serious or not, or if we're going to get away with a nice dry race, or we're going to have a calm. You know, it'd be good to have a bit of rain, because that certainly adds in a lot of unpredictability. Just before we get or sort of like wrap this one up, because I really don't know what to make for a race prediction, because we haven't been here. We haven't been to Shanghai in 5 years. It's been a very long time. And, you know, where's the benchmark for this one? Is this going to be a track that's well suited to Red Bull or Ferrari, Mercedes or Aston Martin? We don't know. I mean, logic dictates that it would be that Red Bull that would have the advantage, because they've just been so much better than everyone else. But we don't, you know, the historic data that we have for this track is pretty stale now. Let's face it. I mean, it's been 5 years. A lot has happened between then and now. And of course, 5 years ago was a completely different formula. We had a different set of technical regulations. They were different cars. So very, very different. So, you know, like I say, logically, my brain tells me that's going to be Max Verstappen that wins. But I'm also keeping my opinions open and ready to evolve and see what happens over the course of the next couple of days. I really wonder how the sprint race on Friday will kind of maybe give us a bit of a hint as to what we might see for Saturday and Sunday as well. So going over to F1.com now, the official Formula One website, they've got a neat article up there written by Mike Seymour called From Schumacher's Last Win to F1's Thousandth Race, Six Unforgettable Chinese Grand Prix Moments. The first one goes back to 2001 when Schumacher was caught out in a pre-race crash. Anyways, let's take a look here. So Seymour writes, Schumacher had slowly been making his way from turn four to turn five kink when he moved across the track and into the path of a fast approaching Christian Albers, causing all sorts of damage to both cars and forcing them to take their spares. And of course, that was back in the day when cars or teams, Formula One teams, had a T car or spare car. And that's something from the past. Anyways, he goes on to write, it went on from bad to worse for Schumacher during the race, with the stewards reprimanding him for his actions before he spun into the gravel behind the safety car. The next memory was Michael Schumacher's last win. That's going back to 2006. And he was in a very fierce battle with Renault. Fernando Alonso, and he made a big statement winning the race that year. Fernando went on to win the championship that year. He won the world championship back in 2005 and 2006. The next one is drama for Lewis Hamilton in his rookie season, and let's just go over that. So the story here, going back to 2007, written by Mike Seymour, says the race had started well for Hamilton as he led away from pole position in the wet and looked set to extend his points lead, only for his tires to suffer as the rain stopped and the track dried up. The rear wing eventually wearing down to the right rear starting or eventually wearing down to the canvas. Hamilton was eventually called to the pits for a fresh set of tires, but disaster struck when he went too deep at the entry, slid into the gravel trap, and ended his race there and then. It effectively handed the win to Raikkonen, who went on to snatch the title. Going on, another top six memory at the Chinese Grand Prix was in 2009 with Red Bull's maiden pole win and 1-2. So it was 2009. If you go back that far, that was the memorable season with the Braun GP when they came onto the scene and really took the F1 world by storm. Anyways, there was a bit of an aberration where we got to the Chinese Grand Prix because Red Bull went, they got the, let's see, they got pole position and third with Sebastian Vettel and Mark Webber. And then they finished with a 1-2 and Jenson Button, who went on to win the championship that year, was third. And then finally was 2012 was the first win for Mercedes in what became a very, very successful decade. And then the last time we were there in 2019 was the 1,000th Grand Prix in Formula One. So, I mean, wow, what a big memorable moment. And it's been quiet ever since, but certainly looking forward to going back to Shanghai this weekend. Anyways, I'm going to wrap it up right there. I thought this was going to be something that, that, you know, when I looked at the schedule, like I say, or I was saying at the beginning of the show, when I put this together over the past couple of days, I was expecting to sit down and do this with Hammy. So perhaps, you know, having the, you know, the challenge of having to do it myself, maybe I rushed through it a little bit more. I mean, when you do a podcast with two people, there's the opportunity to kind of go back and forth. So maybe I've got a little bit more of my, well, obviously I got more of my own opinion and take on things than I would have with Hammy on board tonight. But I thought this one was going to come out at about, you know, an hour and 20 minutes, maybe an hour and a half. And I'm just looking at the clock now and it's coming out to just under 53 minutes, which looking at the time now is 20 after 11 on a Thursday evening. I got to get up and work in the morning. So I'm going to leave it right there, knowing that I still got an hour or two to do some editing. So just want to thank you all, one and all, for joining me tonight. And if you want to help us out and lend us some support, the easiest way to do so is just head on over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you enjoy your podcasts and leave a, you know, 5-star rating and review. Give us a follow on X at ScooterF1Pod or over onto Instagram and just search us up there. And if you've got something to say, please send us an email. scooteryf1pod@gmail.com. I've been kind of busy at work the last couple of days in the 9-to-5, so I'm a little bit behind on the email correspondence, so I will get back to those of you that have dropped us a line in the last little bit, hopefully over the next couple of days. And that's it. Enjoy the sprint race tomorrow. Enjoy the race and qualifying on Saturday and Sunday. Be back on Sunday night to wrap it all up. And have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye for now.